Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We're always interested in your thoughts. Drop us a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com with your suggestions and comments. Let us know what's going on where you are. So we always ask each other, hey, how you doing? It's a common enough question, especially during an election year. And when it comes to economics, a question with many answers. On one hand, we're in the seventh year of an economic recovery after the worst downturn since the Great Depression. On the other hand, well, you may have seen news coverage of a recent report from the National Association of Counties. Indiana's unemployment rate is below the national average, but most counties in the state still have not returned to their pre-recession number of jobs. And in several key metrics, including employment and home sales, six Indiana counties are at the bottom, including Delaware and Madison County. John Ketzenberger is president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, an independent research group that studies taxing and spending policies in Indiana. So on this question of how we're doing as a state, he seemed like a good person to ask.
Unfortunately, the answer is much more complicated than sheer numbers, okay? Let's peel it back a little bit if we can. The numbers are very good for the state. The governor is happy to show that there are more people working now in the state than there were before the recession. And that's true. That number is absolutely true. There are fewer people who are unemployed, according to the numbers. And so on that level, it looks like we're doing really well. But there are a couple of things that need to be brought in to give you a fuller picture. So the next level is, while there are fewer people who are unemployed, a lot of the reason why they aren't unemployed is because they're no longer in the workforce. They've dropped out. So we have more people working and more people out of the workforce at the very same time. And those two things pull against each other when it comes to the economy. So while the number is good on the one side, it's taken down a little bit on the other side. Another number that is real and is apparent but not readily understood is that the wealth of the people who are working is not as great as it was 20 or 30 years ago and actually lags the rest of the region and the country by a wide margin. And that wealth is measured by per capita income, how much people make on an individual basis. And Indiana is consistently in the low 30s in rankings among the states and has been for about 20 years. And really, it started to get hollowed out in the recession of 1981-82. And that's when the manufacturing base in this state took a huge hit. We lost 100,000 jobs in manufacturing at that time, and we've continued to lose those manufacturing jobs since. Now, the jobs that come back, they don't pay as much.
And not just when we're talking about service jobs, but even manufacturing jobs today often don't pay as much or don't pay that livable wage, that middle-class income that we're used to.
Yeah, I wrote about Anderson, Indiana earlier this summer. Last summer, I guess. And I was struck because I was in Anderson for, you know, an event that would appeal to millennials, right? It was a beer festival, and it was fabulous. They closed down the main drag. They probably had 15 breweries up there. You could go for a price. You could go from one to another and try their beer. And it was really a lot of fun. Beautiful day. And right there where that was held was the Paramount Theater, which is just a beacon of Art Deco fabulousness. I mean, it's a tremendous place. And then you start looking at the rest of the buildings around there, and that town really developed around the time of that theater in the early 20th century. And when you looked at that, you could just see the wealth and the civic pride evident in the downtown. They had this theater. The other buildings were built well. They had style, panache. People were proud of what they were doing. And so the reason Anderson was able to do that was because it became a center of automotive manufacturing. You know, starters were big there. Batteries were big there. Many other elements of manufacturing related to the auto industry. And as that grew, more jobs came. And with those jobs came organization. And with those organization came good contracts, good pay, good benefits. So the war comes. It gets even better because they're making materiel for the military. War ends. You got all these people come back. You have a workforce that's got jobs and money. And it just builds and builds and builds. Until about the 1970s, 1980s. And so you have this very wealthy community. They have good jobs, they pay well, they've got good benefits. People can support large families, 4, 5, 6, 7 people on one job, and their kids can go to school, their kids can go to vacation, all of these things. Everything that you think about in terms of, you know, Indiana, right? So that happens. Then the recessions in the early 70s, the automobile industry in Indiana, in the United States, their inability to adapt, the jobs start to go away, NAFTA gets passed, international trade, global trade, jobs start moving, shipping, and all of that stuff. Then we get to the recession that I mentioned earlier, and you start losing those manufacturing jobs. So that all underlies where we are right now. So Indiana loses all those manufacturing jobs. People have to work. They figure out other ways to work.
And that same story could be told about South Bend and Fort Wayne and Evansville.
It's the state.
Yeah.
Look, Indiana still, on a per capita basis, has more jobs in manufacturing than any other state in the country. That's what we do and have done. The difference is those jobs don't pay nearly what they used to pay. Those jobs don't have the benefits that they used to have, and in many cases, they don't have the hours that they had. So when you have a new auto plant going to Greensburg, and they're making close to 200,000 cars a year down there now, the pay is about maybe two-thirds. In many cases, when you start, it's half of what the people in Anderson were making in the heyday. And that doesn't account for inflation. That's real. I mean, you know, they were making $40 an hour in some cases in Anderson on those jobs, plus benefits. Now they're making $20 or $25 an hour on the job, and they don't have as good of benefits. So it's much more difficult to support a family on that kind of a job. That's the difference we're talking about, John. That's where the number of people working is impressive and important, but the quality of the job in many cases is less in terms of pay and benefits. And so that's why people are struggling. That's why the economy hasn't grown like we would anticipate it growing. And that's the problem that has to be solved.
John Katzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, talking about the state of the state, if you will. The research group is sponsoring the 2016 Indiana Gridiron Dinner on February 16th. It's just issued 2 new reports on the fiscal health of Indiana cities and the effect of property tax caps. Their website is indianafiscal.org.
Indiana Weekend, interesting people and places from across the region. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
It's a little bit of a paradox. For all its farm fields, Indiana is very much a manufacturing state. But as technology makes factory workers more efficient, the number of people needed to run those factories has decreased. That, with the businesses that have closed or moved overseas, means fewer jobs available in places like Muncie and Anderson and Marion. That doesn't mean an end to livable wages, though. John Katzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute is among those who point out the next generation of companies locating here. He cites Aperio, a consulting firm that is relocating its headquarters from San Francisco to Indianapolis.
What they do, John, is I think a great adaptation of using the past to build off the future. They hire people all over the world to do projects for them. And the jobs that the people here have in Indianapolis are to manage those projects. So a client comes to them, and they have clients that range from Home Depot to Nike to, you know, name your big company, and they work with them. And if they have a marketing project that they need to get done, they come to Aperio and say, this is what we want to do. And so then Aperio goes out to its people, literally all over the world, and say, here's the job. We want you and you and you and you to do this. And they do it. They know the deadline. But if they want to work in the middle of the night, that's fine. If they want to work, you know, in India and somebody coordinates with somebody in London, that's fine. They get the job done. Those people get paid. They get paid well, but they're not employees. That's the difference. We have to figure out how to operate more in this distributed fashion. We're still chasing factories, by and large, when we need to be chasing these kinds of businesses that do create the same wealth, but do it in a much different way. And that's the challenge. And like you said, there's no magic bullet, but it takes people with imagination from, you know, the governor on down to be able to pursue these kinds of things and rebuild the wealth that Indiana once had.
Do you get the sense that that message is being heard by people in economic development at the state level?
I think the people in economic development hear it to an extent, and here's why I'm fairly optimistic about that. The regional approach that was enacted in the legislature last year and was recently acted upon by the administration, I think is an acknowledgement of the need to readjust how we approach these things. Traditionally, economic development had been done on a city-by-city, county-by-county basis, and we can't do that. You can't have Angola competing with Kendallville for a plant because that doesn't do anybody any good. It may make the winning community feel better, but it doesn't help the state and it doesn't help all the people who live in that area as much as it could. We have to look at Northeast Indiana as Fort Wayne at the hub and all those counties around there, you know, Noble County where Kendallville is, Steuben County where Angola is, and all of the other counties in that area, they have an economic interest that's in that area. And that's true of Central Indiana, Northwest Indiana. There are several regions. So this competition where the legislature said, okay, create these regional development associations and then show us what you'd like to do. And if you do a good job, we'll give you $42 million that you'll go out and find money to match and you'll put these projects in place that won't pay attention to county lines, that won't pay attention to city boundaries, but will help the region. And the legislature enabled two regions, $84 million. The recommendation came back for three regions. And it looks like the legislature's challenge now is to decide whether or not to give that extra money to the third region. But that covers a very large portion of the state, gets those areas building that sense of place that we talked about so that they can become more attractive. People, when they are looking for jobs increasingly, don't get a job first, they go to a place and then get a job. You see that all the time with your students. And I think that's starting to become apparent. And so that's why when you look at Indiana, you look at the engines, right? As Central Indiana goes, so goes the rest of the state. But you also have major engines in Fort Wayne and South Bend and the region and Evansville up in the, you know, in the Muncie Central, you know, the East Central area. And that's where we're going to regain our footing. If this is successful and if they do it well and they recognize that these areas are in it together, then we'll be successful. And I think that's where there's reason for optimism.
As you look around at Indiana communities and what they're doing to grow their economic prospects, are there any bright lights that you see? Any interesting communities out there?
Yeah, there are a lot of, I think, bright lights. An area that's often overlooked, I think, is Warsaw, Indiana. And the reason Warsaw is such a bright light is because of three companies that make the vast majority of replacement joints, the biomedical
everything
devices.
From replacement hips to
all kinds of things.
Right.
And it's interesting because that's much like Anderson was in our previous example, or Muncie, or any of these places where the auto industry drove development. Well, by a quirk of fate, there were people in Warsaw who 100 years ago were making wooden legs, right? You know, the orthotics of their time. And they're up from that grew a cluster and a specialty, and these people are very good at it. International companies now own those places, but the center of the universe when it comes to orthotics is Warsaw, Indiana. You know, we saw with Cook Group and still see with Cook Group in Bloomington, and they have plants in other places around South Central Indiana. In the 1960s, a man named Bill Cook became enamored of implantable devices in the body to fix problems. And he very early became an expert on intravenous application of these things. In other words, stents. This was in the 60s when this was radical. The idea of putting something, a balloon, in somebody's veins to solve a problem. And now, when Bill Cook died 3 or 4 years ago, he was by far the wealthiest man in Indiana. The family's got a worth of about $6 billion, and that company is employing people all over the state with high wages, right? You go to a Cook plant, and they are making stents and other devices now with high value, and those people are paid accordingly.
Talking with John Ketzenberger on the subject of Indiana's economy, the changing nature of what constitutes good jobs in the new economy. And he mentioned a company called Aperio, a business management consulting firm that is moving its headquarters from San Francisco to Indianapolis. The company says it's hiring more than 400 people in Indianapolis over the next 5 years.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss on Indiana Public Radio.
In a conversation today about the health of local communities with John Ketzenberger. On the one hand, Indiana's unemployment rate is below the national average, but six of our counties, including Delaware and Madison, fared poorly in a recent economic report from the National Association of Counties. We've heard from a number of people in economic development about the really good job being done in one central Indiana city.
Kokomo is a really good example because of the tenacity on display by the people in the business community there, but also the people in the political class there. Kokomo has long had relationships with Chrysler to build transmissions, and they've got two huge transmission plants and maintain those. And those are good jobs, and they pay well, and they help make Kokomo a fairly wealthy community. But the tenacity I'm talking about is probably 10 or maybe 15 years ago, there was a joint venture to build a transmission plant in the south part of their county, Howard County. And they had it going, they cleared the land, they built the plant, and then the joint partnership fell apart. That is devastating. And the thing that's impressive about Kokomo is that from that, they continued to work. And they continued to use the resources available and their creativity and imagination. And they were able to work that to the point where now there's a new partnership. And now that plant that was empty for so long and looked like a big white elephant is producing. It's making transmissions because the people in there are making those transmissions. And it's a credit to the political class, a credit to the economic developers, a credit to all of the people who live there and were able to figure out how to make the best out of this mess. And now they've got a plant that's producing and creating wealth and livings for people who work there. It's a great example.
Let's talk a little bit about this session of the General Assembly. Part of what we need these days are people to help us understand. One day there's a news release that this group wants to fund roads and transportation at this level, and the other guys say, well, no, we'll double that. I don't think there can be much doubt that our roads need a lot of help and that this can help the economy as a whole if we have good infrastructure. We have bridges that are falling apart.
Well, a couple things, John. First of all, Indiana's reputation as a crossroads of America is fact. More interstates run through here. We have three ports, water ports, that deliver all over the world. We have a airport in Fort Wayne and an airport in Indianapolis that are among the leaders in terms of freight moved throughout the world. I know a pilot for FedEx whose route is between here and China. It's a thing that I don't think people fully appreciate, but Indiana is the center of moving things. And that's one of the reasons why manufacturing has always been so strong here. It made sense that if you built it here, you could get it out to the rest of the world pretty easily. So there's that. That's important. And the second thing about all that is that we need to understand that transportation is more than just a highway, more than just a road. So transportation includes those ports, those airports, rail lines, mass transit. That has to be understood. Finally, there is a huge need for better transportation channels. And let's just talk about roads to begin with. It's nice to build new roads. It's like when you build a new house. It's really nice to look at. And then after 15 or 20 years, it may still be nice to look at, but it needs a new roof. It needs a new furnace. It needs these basic things to maintain so that it's still a good house. We haven't put a new furnace in. We haven't put a new roof on in a long time. And as a result, we've got literally, I'm working on a study right now with some folks about local roads, those in cities, towns, and counties. We have needs in order to bring roads to a median level, which would be 6 or 7 on a scale of 10 in terms of how good they are. We need at least $3 billion more in spending than we have right now.
I know this has to confuse some people because we had major moves. We made a deal for a 75 or whatever year lease of the Indiana Toll Road that added $3 billion. So what happened?
Well, that money got spent. Some of it is on Interstate 69 that's rising from Evansville to Indianapolis. Some of it was an additional lane. Some of it was new bridges and that kind of thing. And all of that, you can't argue that that's not good. But from a policy perspective, it allowed the legislature to kick the can down the road. And the can that's being kicked is long-term funding. And there's the essential question, okay? For years and years and years, and I think this is good policy, was good policy, most of the transportation money that was spent in the state, the majority came back from federal gas taxes and was redirected to the state on a very difficult formula. So there was that. And then the rest was derived from gas taxes levied in Indiana by the state government. And then there are assorted other taxes that are involved. But all of them were done at a time when cars were big and got, you know, 15 miles a gallon was considered good. And so people used a lot of fuel, they generated a lot of tax, and then they could use that money on the roads. Those days are long gone and our taxing structure has not adapted. And so there is functionally far less money available for roads now than there was then. And we haven't, by kicking the can down the road, we haven't faced the policy imperative necessary to adapt. It's difficult because you're talking about raising taxes. You're talking about changing the tax mix. You're talking about figuring out how best to fund these roads.
They're headed down south and they're still running today. Saying, go on, take your money and run.
John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute, an independent research group that studies taxing and spending policies in Indiana. Today's show is part of a series we're doing on solutions during this time when, even after 7 years of an economic recovery, some of our communities face such stark challenges. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Sean Ashcraft, and all the folks in the front office, including your friends Matt Bloom, Connie Clary, Lori Georgie, Emily Kowalski, Andrea Lutz, John Morgan, Angie Rapp, and Debbie Webb. Glad you could join us this time. Hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you would like more information or have a suggestion. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio.
Indiana Weekend with host John Strauss. Our show is engineered at Indiana Public Radio, produced by Sean Ashcraft. Major support for Indiana Weekend comes from IPR's listeners. We hope you'll join your friends who are IPR members. You can go to indianapublicradio.org or give us a call at 1-800-646-1812. Join us again next week for Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.